This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. They call him MKBHD. He's talked with some of the biggest names in tech, like Tesla founder Elon Musk and Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates. They spoke with him on his YouTube channel, reaching millions of his subscribers. Marques Brownlee gained that massive following with in-depth product reviews of the latest devices. He's been a star on YouTube for almost as long as YouTube has existed. What should we keep an eye on these days in the consumer side of tech? How has the landscape changed over the last decade? And how do you turn off those damn smartphone notifications anyway? Marques Brownlee joins us now from NPR in New York. Marques, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We welcome your questions about consumer tech or your stories about how Marques's work has affected or helped you. So email us 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. So how did you get into doing YouTube videos? What was the moment you decided, I'm going to post about this?
Yeah, it was back in 2009 when I was in high school, and I was basically in the market for a new laptop, as many high school students are, so I was sort of doing my research about, you know, which laptop to get, watching some other YouTube videos, and I eventually made my choice and got my laptop and found a whole bunch of things that I didn't necessarily see in those other videos. So it sort of felt right to turn the camera on myself and sort of make videos about those things that were missing. So if someone else found themselves in my shoes, they'd have more information to pick from. And so that's what the first few videos were about.
I hate to embarrass you right at the top of the program, but we figured it would be nice for our listeners to hear a clip from your very first video. Here's where it all began.
All right. Welcome to my first video. Bought a new laptop, and it's an HP Pavilion DV7T, so of course I got the Media Center remote with it. Quite a nice remote. So I'm going to do a very, very short review of it. Obviously, I can't show you what it does on the screen because I'm recording it on the laptop, but I'll get into that later.
The very first YouTube video by Marques Brownlee. First of all, are you all right? Your heart didn't stop or anything. That's.
Oh, man. That's always hard to listen to.
It's one of those things that, like, your mom does. Like, come here, let me get my phone and show you my kid's first video. You got to love it. You got to love it. What do you think back on? Like, who were you at 15? Who was that kid?
I mean, it's still a lot of what I am into today. It's just a kid that's really into technology and wants to share it with other people who might also be interested. So, I mean, if there's other people who are thinking, you know what, I might get that HP laptop, but I wonder if it has a Media Center remote in its PCI slot, now you have that video to watch.
I guess, I mean, who were you? Were you shy? Were you outgoing? Were you bookish? Were you wonky? Were you new to technology? Who were you?
I would say I've always been into technology. My dad was into IT, so that was sort of a natural progression. I wouldn't say I was the most outgoing kid, so it's just sort of my, like, get home from school and this is my hobby type of thing is what it turned into. Talking to a microphone and a camera and editing it to how I want it to look and sound. But yeah, that's what fell natural was to just start to make that first few videos.
When did it become clear that people were actually watching? What was that like?
Yeah, that's a tough question. People ask, when did it first start to pick up or when did it start to gain traction? And it's really hard to point to any one specific thing since it's been 10 years and 1,000 videos. But what I will say is, somewhere around year two or three, there was a video I put up about Safari, Apple's web browser, when it first came out on Windows. And, you know, just put that video up talking about it, how to download it, how to get started with it. And overnight, it ended up with a couple thousand views, which at the time was more people than had ever seen any of my videos, let alone had subscribed to the channel. And so I figured that was sort of a light bulb moment that people actually care about, you know, this timely information and would watch videos about tech just kind of for fun.
So describe your channel to someone who might not have seen it. If they check it out, what would they find?
Sure. Okay. You'll find a lot of videos about new tech, gadgets, specifically things that you can buy. So I'm going to be the personality and the person reviewing the tech or showcasing it or investigating it or explaining it. Trying to give you the best idea of what it would be like to own that thing or what it would be like to be in that situation and sort of talking through the tech around it.
It also looks like, I'm just looking at your page now, there's also some explainers of things like 5G that are kind of at the cutting edge of technology, right?
Yes. And it seems pretty useful to be able to explain, given what I've experienced over the past couple of years, some tech that might be sort of hard for normal people to grasp. I can bring all the information I've heard in the past couple of years and put it in one place.
There's also some pretty wild stuff. Like, you've done videos in the last month about the first and last folding phone, and also what you described as the Tesla of electric scooters. So there's some more cutting edge stuff, or maybe some more experimental stuff too.
Yeah, part of the awesome position I'm in is that not only do I get to review, you know, your classic smartphones and tablets and things like that, but when you're in a position with an audience like this, companies that make the wildest, most cutting edge, bleeding edge, what I call dope tech, will want to put that in front of those eyeballs too. So they'll reach out and you'll have, you know, motorized electric scooters or folding phones or all sorts of crazy things that they want to show off too.
Now, how does that work in terms of, you know, at least with, you know, as a journalist, we have to keep a really arm's length relationship with people who say, hey, let's give you this free thing so you can do publicity on it. How do you handle that?
Right. Yeah, there's always that line. So you have to make sure that the fact that something either is provided or some access is given never has any effect on the final product or the video. The only thing additional is the fact that I actually got to make the video. There's a lot of YouTubers put in a position where they feel like they want to, you know, keep a good relationship with the company, so they keep getting the newest phone so they can review it instead of having to buy it. And I guess I'm really lucky that I'm not in that position, that I get to just buy it if I want to, or if there's a company that has something they want to share, I can turn around and put the camera on that.
We're speaking to Marques Brownlee, a YouTuber doing tech videos, consumer reviews, and explainers of what's new and what's next, a man with, at the moment, 9,139,980 subscribers, but who's counting? All those subscribers are pretty eager to hear some of his advice about consumer choices. We heard from several of you who say that you kind of rely on Marques's videos to make choices. Here is what Ron left in our inbox.
Hello. My name is Ron, calling from New Jersey. I've never called a radio station, but I was excited because I've been following MKBHD for some years now, ever since he was a student at Stevens. And I've watched your growth from 2000 to over close to 2 million viewers. I'm very proud of you. Please keep doing what you're doing. Many people like myself don't buy anything electronic without watching your video.
Ron, thanks very much for leaving that voicemail with us. There's a few things in that, Marques, that I'd like to break down. First of all, the fact that nothing we've done on 1A in the last 2.5 years has convinced Ron to ever share anything with a radio station till you showed up. So I'm happy, but damn. Beyond that, MKBHD, where does that name come from?
Yeah, first of all, shout out to Ron. Thanks, man. The name MKBHD is just, I needed a shorter way to remember, or for people to remember how to find me, because Marques Brownlee is hard to spell and remember for a lot of people. So MKB is my initials, and HD is for high definition. So it's MKBHD.
Now, you said since you were a student at Stevens High School, college?
Stevens Tech, which is up in the corner of Hoboken in New Jersey.
And in terms of the last part, he said that he doesn't buy anything electronic without watching your video. What is it about you that makes you such a linchpin for people before they make a purchase?
Yeah, so again, I'm in a position right now where I don't have any sort of obligation to say anything good or bad about a company or product that I don't really feel is true. So everything that comes across my desk, everything I get to review and unbox and check out, I'm going to give my brutally 100% honest opinions about it. You know, in the context of other things I've tried and other things I've reviewed, I get to be super honest and forthcoming. And that's sort of the trust that people have built over time, that if there is something wrong with it, I'm going to share that. If there is something great about it, I'm going to share that too.
Now, back up to before you had the YouTube channel, were you that kid that everyone would come to get the VCR to stop flashing 12 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 12 o'clock? Like, was there anything before you hit YouTube that kind of presaged what you're doing now? Or does this even catch you by surprise that you're doing this?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I've always felt like I've been into tech, but never really super outwardly. So I would be really intent. Like, I would love to make that purchase decision about what phone I get, but then I wouldn't really talk to other kids at school about the decision of what phone they got. I just kind of silently observed it. You know, I guess I've always been into math and things like that, but nothing that really ever said, like, oh, this kid's going to be a tech reviewer. I guess I helped my parents with the VCR.
When you were starting to become more of a personality, and I want to talk to you more about more general tech questions in a little bit, but what was that rise like for you? I mean, I can only imagine what it's like for a kid just coming out of his teens, just kind of reaching adulthood, to have people who recognize you, who send you, you know, thank you emails, who probably send you some, you know, pretty nasty comments or downvoted your videos, or like, just what was it like dealing with, I won't say fame, but notoriety, with dealing with being recognizable?
Yeah, so here's the thing about YouTube and a young age and gaining this sort of notoriety is a lot of people get it sort of like a landslide, where they go from never having made anything online, just having their friends, to instantly there's a million people that want to see them when they go in the street. And I luckily haven't really had any sort of landslide like that. I mentioned earlier it's 10 years and 1,000 videos, but it's sort of been this slow gradient of me being able to calibrate and build myself up to, you know, people in public saying, hey, I bought this phone because of you, or, you know, people emailing me, or even like you mentioned, the comments section on YouTube, slowly growing that over time, hasn't been too jarring. And I think that's actually, some people love to go viral and see if you can pop as fast as possible, but it's sort of a blessing in disguise that that hasn't happened. So it's just been a sort of a comfortable pacing myself.
We're starting to get some tech questions from Marquez Brownlee. We'll put some of them to you in a moment. One listener asks, 5G is very limited because of the high frequency and carriers like Verizon and AT&T are really pushing that tech. What carrier is in the best position to make a 5G that actually covers the entire country, not just one block in Providence, Rhode Island? We'll get your thoughts on 5G and an explanation of what 5G is when we continue with YouTuber Marquez Brownlee, and we'll answer some more of your questions as well. I'm Joshua Johnson. And you're listening on air and online to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We are speaking to Marquez Brownlee, better known as MKBHD, a tech reviewer with more than 9 million subscribers to his YouTube channel. He's game to taking some of your questions, too. What kinds of things do you take into consideration before buying new tech? Do you turn to YouTube videos for help, whether from his channel or from others? If there are things about the future of tech that have you concerned, that have you confused, now's a good time to share your questions. So comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Broadly speaking, Marquez, what makes a tech product worth buying? What are your criteria for something that you would recommend, generally speaking?
Sure. I mean, it's going to come down to what gives you the best user experience. And something a lot of people overlook is tech is actually a really personal purchase for a lot of people. Like, if you think about how much time you spend on your smartphone or your computer, for example, that is a immensely personal time that you spend all the time on it. So I think about, like, you know, the type of priorities people have in terms of battery life. If you take a lot of photos, you look for a great camera. If you spend a lot of time online, you want it to have a big screen and you want to have a great screen for watching videos and things like that. So it's going to be personal to what you do on that device that decides if it's actually a good buy or not.
We got this voicemail from a listener who could use some advice on buying a new computer. Talk about a personal device, personal computer, get it. Here's what Stuart left in our inbox.
Hi, this is Stuart, and I'm calling this week from the Jersey Shore. I am thinking of purchasing a new Windows laptop. The laptop I've been using is a hand-me-down. It was running Windows 8 when it was purchased. It got upgraded to Windows 10, but it never really worked out so well on that upgrade. I know I don't want a Chromebook. I know I don't want an Apple product, and I want to spend less than $500. What do you recommend?
Stuart, thanks for the question. Marquez, what would you recommend?
Wow, it's tough. So I've done a lot of laptops in the past couple years, but almost all of them were in that premium, like $800 to $1,500 laptop territory. So I actually don't have a great answer right off the bat for a sub-$500 Windows laptop, mainly because I'm usually recommending Chromebooks in that price tag, which is kind of funny that he specifically doesn't want a Chromebook. So I think he's already on the right path to knowing what you don't want, and I hope if you keep finding keep following down that path, you'll be able to narrow it down. There's a couple great Sonys and a couple great HP laptops still in that price range that I think you'll find pretty good.
Before we continue, Marquez, I should just ask you, in the interest of full disclosure, do you have any arrangements with any tech companies or the promotional companies, PR firms, to review their products for compensation, either pay or ad revenue? Are there any of those kinds of relationships?
Great question. Absolutely none.
Okay.
You would think like, oh, he spends a lot of time talking about Apple and Google and, you know, a lot of these bigger companies' products, but that's just the fact that they make some of the most popular products that people are very curious about. But yeah, no obligations at all over here.
Gotcha. Appreciate you saying that. With regard to the Chromebook, I find Chromebooks get a lot of love and a lot of hate. Like, some people love their Chromebooks, which is basically like, you know, it's the Chrome browser in a device, pretty much. And some people just can't stand them. What's your take on Chromebooks?
It's going to come down again to what you do on it. So a Chromebook is perfect for someone that doesn't do a ton of things on their laptop. They do a lot of email, a lot of web surfing, and maybe a lot of shopping online, but doesn't necessarily need specific applications like photo editing apps or video production or whatever else it is you do that you won't find as powerful on a Chromebook. So things like my parents, for example, would do great with a Chromebook, and I think my dad actually uses a Chromebook right now because that's what he does when he's on the go on a laptop. But people who need like Adobe Audition or Photoshop or other specific apps that aren't Chromebooks, they'll hate Chrome OS.
And he said he knows he doesn't want an Apple product. That seems to be one of the most polarizing products, popular, but I know plenty of people who are like, oh, use a MacBook, do you? And then I know other people who are like, oh, all I use is a MacBook. I wouldn't use anything else. What do you make of this cult of Apple?
It's fascinating. They make a lot of really good products, but they also do have a sort of a really, if you were to have like a caricature of the company, a pretty stubborn attitude about a lot of things. And part of that is just the consistency of their design hierarchy in their company, and they always value quietness over thermals, and they have certain things that they always continue to do that make people mad, that are easy to complain about. But when you actually get down to using them, they're actually often really great products. And of course, people love their iPhones, so it's easy to sort of get sucked into that ecosystem.
What do you think about the future of Apple? Johnny Ive, their chief designer, is leaving the company, and some people have said that Tim Cook, the CEO, just doesn't have the magic that Steve Jobs had, or maybe what some would call the reality distortion field that Steve Jobs had. I don't know how much all of that matters if they make products that people buy, especially because these days the iPhone drives Apple's profits. Far more people buy iPhones than Macs, but what's your take on Apple as a company these days?
Yeah, it's definitely a sort of a case of a really, really big boat with a lot of small paddles. And you did have rare sort of incredibly, you know, passionate and powerful people like Steve Jobs and Johnny Ive in their past that had really big paddles and were able to steer the company in directions that they felt made the most sense. But I think Apple, when you look at it, like they're a behemoth, and every decision into every product they make goes through 100, 1,000 people. Like, there's going to be choices made that make a lot of sense just because that's how many people have to approve them. So yeah, I think Apple as a whole is sort of generally fine. I think a lot of people look at the declining iPhone sales and think, oh, they're doomed, or they're not setting records anymore, or their profits are starting to turn around, they're done for.
Well, and they haven't wowed the world in a long time. Like, I don't know anyone who's like, oh my God, the Apple Watch. I mean, they bought the Apple Watches. I'm wearing one, but I don't think that people, you know, look at them the way that they would have those Steve Jobs moments where he said, oh, there's just one more thing, and then he reaches in his pocket and he pulls out something magical.
That is totally true, but the other question is how many other companies competing with Apple have wowed the world in that way recently as well. Like, I look at, there's lots of products where people are trying to wow the world, and you'll see things like Samsung's Galaxy Fold, which, I mean, a folding phone in concept, that's incredible. Like, you would think that's the next thing that's going to wow the world.
And just to be clear, you mean like the screen folds, not just like a flip phone.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So I guess for those who don't know, the Galaxy Fold was Samsung's attempt at a phone that was about the size of a 7-inch tablet. So imagine maybe an iPad mini, and then the entire thing folds in half and fits in your pocket. And this is a sort of a revolutionary thing. It had another screen on the outside. Hey, maybe this is the one device that can replace the phone and the tablet. And it sort of wowed the world when it was on stage. But didn't turn out so well. So other companies are also trying to wow the world. I don't think we're ever going to be able to live up to maybe the most successful product of all time in the original iPhone.
Maybe wowing the world is one of the bigger mistakes that companies try to make when they think they know it's going to wow people and they don't. What about the big mistakes that consumers make? What do you think of the one or two big things, the big pitfalls that we tend to fall into when we're buying something new?
I think right off the bat, what comes to mind is actually not a mistake when buying something, but a mistake when thinking about buying something is paying too much attention to the flashy and the demos and what I call gimmicks, stuff you can just throw in the gimmick bucket. So there's a lot of times when you're thinking about buying a new smartphone, for example, you might get wowed by this selfie camera that flips around on this motorized hinge and think that's the reason I'm going to buy this phone, when you sort of forget you don't actually take that many selfies. So you have to think about, again, I've gone back to this over and over, but how exactly you really use these devices when considering which one is the best one for you, and that'll help you make the best decision.
We're speaking to Marques Brownlee, taking your questions about consumer tech. We'd love to hear from you. Email 1A at WAMU.org, tweet us at 1A, or comment on our Facebook page. Let me get back to that question about 5G internet service. One of our listeners asked, 5G is very limited because of the high frequency, and carriers like Verizon and AT&T are really pushing that tech. What carrier is in the best position to make a 5G that actually covers the entire country, not just one block in Providence, Rhode Island? Now, nothing against Providence, so please do not send me angry tweets. Just set that aside. Sure. And before we answer the question, Marques, what exactly is 5G?
So 5G, in short, is the fifth generation, so next generation of wireless technology that you'll see in a lot of smartphones and a lot of devices in the next couple of years. Main focus being speed, as with any generation, is almost an order of magnitude better than 4G. But then there are many other complications, like the question mentioned, as far as rollout.
Well, who do you think is the best poised to do that, or is that even clear yet?
It's a really complicated question, and it's almost part of the reason why I started a podcast, to dive into this stuff way deeper. But I went into this in the 5G Explained video. There are a couple different technologies as far as implementing 5G, one being millimeter wave that I talked about in the video, where it's really, really high frequency, but not great range. But then some other carriers like Sprint that are doing their versions of 5G that are a little bit slower, but have a sort of broadband spectrum that do actually go through walls and don't have quite the same limitations. So the question of who's best set up is not quite answerable yet, but I think those broadband waves actually have some promise on top of millimeter wave.
And for those folks who are like, 5G, I didn't even know there was a 4G. That's what we call LTE, right? That was 4G, right?
Yeah, you'll mostly see it called 4G LTE.
Another listener asked, can you explain the purpose of 5G? I know the speed and the number of devices jump significantly, but the coverage and penetration of 5G is awful. Isn't most people's issue with cellular consistent connection, not speed, when you have a good connection? 5G will do nothing to improve 4G's gaps. Marques?
Great point. And I think if you were to say the point of 5G, you'd more be looking towards pushing the bleeding edge of what's possible just as far as a mobile connection. So some things I mentioned in my explainer are things like latency-free connection between devices. So if you imagine a surgeon on one half of the country and a robot on the other half of the country performing a surgery with absolutely zero lag, not even being in the same room as their patient, that's the type of thing that's not possible with 4G. But is possible when you sort of push those horizons towards lower latency, higher bandwidth stuff.
So, and I'm sorry, by latency, you mean the time lag in milliseconds between when the surgeon pushes the button, it transits the country, and the robot reacts to the command. That's the latency, right?
Exactly. And latency, it improves significantly with 5G as well. So it's not just overall speed, but you'll see things like that improve too.
Let me shift gears for just a minute. We want to talk consumer tech a little bit more, but there's been a big story that's developing this week. And Marques, I'd like to get your thoughts on this as well, but a group of state attorneys general is moving forward with an antitrust investigation of companies like Google and Facebook and Amazon and Apple. This comes after the Justice Department announced its own investigation last month. Joining us now from San Francisco is Tony Rahm. He's a technology policy reporter at The Washington Post. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tell us about this antitrust probe that the state attorneys general are moving forward with. What are they targeting, and what states are involved?
Yeah, it's very early days, but there's a growing concern among state and federal regulators that companies like Amazon, Facebook, Google, and Apple have become too big and powerful, and that as a result, they're causing harm to their competitors and to consumers. And so the news that we got this week is that that interest in antitrust among state attorneys general is beginning to formalize. They're talking amongst themselves about a broad probe of the industry. And while we don't know the specific target just yet, we know that they're looking across the board in Silicon Valley. And as we understand it, based on conversations we've had with the Justice Department, there could be about a dozen states involved in this inquiry. So it's a big deal for the industry. It's really the first time that we've seen antitrust concerns be operationalized by regulators who could do something about it.
Now, this has happened in bits and pieces, Tony, these antitrust concerns. I mean, the Federal Trade Commission has some, some oversight over this. There have been court cases in terms of concerns of conspiracies over hiring and poaching or agreements not to poach employees from company to company. Apple and Samsung have been beating each other over the head in court for goodness knows how long. Is this an extension of what's already been going on, or is this something brand new?
In many ways, it's brand new. We haven't really seen state attorneys general look broadly at the industry for antitrust concerns like this. We've seen individual examples, such as when the feds went after Google and decades ago when they did the same with Microsoft. But there's just this belief that all of Silicon Valley has become too big and too powerful. And it's not just the states, we should be clear. There are two reviews happening at the federal level as well. The first is happening at the Department of Justice, which is looking at things like search, e-commerce, and app stores, the very sorts of things that are put in place by companies like Apple and Facebook and Google. And we're seeing a similar thing happening at the Federal Trade Commission, another U.S. antitrust agency. And there we know for certain that Facebook is under investigation.
Now, do all of these different probes between the states and the feds, do they collaborate, or are these on separate tracks?
They're supposed to collaborate, and they say that they're working together, but they could proceed down different tracks if regulators ultimately have a different view as to whether Silicon Valley has become too big and too powerful. So it really remains to be seen. Because it's early days and because this will take many, many months to come together, one thing to watch will be is if state and federal regulators cooperate.
Tony, can you give me an example of what we're talking about here in terms of how it might affect everyday people? I mean, you know, as long as I can go on to Google and search for what I want, or say, oh, I'd rather search on DuckDuckGo or search on Bing or whatever, or search through Safari. As long as I can, you know, get to the sources of content that I want, you know, what difference does it make? Why is it a big deal if there are these giant companies, as long as I can pick the one I want?
Right. This is the big question. What is the harm here? Because sites like Amazon and Facebook and Google, they're very popular among consumers. We know that they're using these things. So the question that regulators have to identify is, are they being hurt in ways that they do or don't understand? And so let me give you two examples of the things that regulators are looking at. The first is with Facebook. Remember, Facebook owns Instagram, a photo sharing app, and WhatsApp, which is a messaging service. But it didn't always own those services. The government allowed Facebook to purchase them. So the question is Facebook, as this behemoth in social networking, using its size to gobble up rivals, essentially ensuring that if you don't want to use a Facebook service, you really have nowhere else to turn as an alternative, which is a big deal right now, given all the conversations we're having about consumer privacy and what Facebook is or isn't doing to protect your data. The other issue with a company like Google has to do with alternatives. The fact that Google is the main search result or the search engine that people use, because of that power, the ranking that Google assigns to results when you're looking up a particular business or a kind of business really matters to these companies. It could have an effect on their bottom lines. So these are the kinds of things that regulators are looking at. These, you know, maybe not super obvious effects that bigness can have from Silicon Valley.
Tony, stick around. I have some more questions for you when we come back. But Marquez, I wonder, do you see any of the impacts of this potential antitrust concern in the consumer tech that you review, that maybe some of these companies are just getting a little too big?
At the moment, you don't see it as much. Mainly, you're seeing it in the form of privacy and people being concerned about how their data is shared and spread if it shouldn't be. But generally, when you look at the final user product, you're more concerned about the convenience of it. And the companies, with all the information and all the power they have, are very concerned with hopefully keeping your trust and making sure they're still on the good side of consumers by delivering as much convenience as possible, by making Google search results great, by making Facebook as convenient as you'd like it to be. And so that's just the way it's been.
We'll continue in just a minute with Marquez Brownlee and with Tony Rahm of The Washington Post. Got a few more questions for you, Tony. And Marquez, then we'll get back to some more consumer tech questions. Also some other consumer questions. One listener liked your episode about sneaker shopping. We'll get to that in a minute. Stay close. Back now to our conversation with YouTuber Marquez Brownlee and Tony Rahm of The Washington Post. Tony, with regards to these investigations from either the state attorneys general or the Justice Department, can you explain what happens now? You know, what's the process and are there any particular outcomes that either the states or the feds are hoping for?
Right. It's a slow burn. These things take a long time to resolve. So we could maybe be chatting a year from now and still we don't have a resolution from the states or the feds. And part of that has to do with the sheer amount of investigation that has to go on for these kinds of investigations to lead to outcomes. They have to get lots of information from a company like Facebook and Google and from the their rivals and kind of understand the market. And so from there, regulators have to make a decision. First, they have to decide, do they think that one of these companies does pose a competition concern, hurting other competitors or hurting consumers. And second, they've got to decide if they're willing to go to court. Because at the end of the day, if they see a company like Facebook and Google as too big and they want to unravel it, that's going to be something that has to play out in the legal system. And so we could be talking about even more years of fighting over this sort of thing. So I wouldn't look for a resolution anytime soon.
What have we heard so far, Tony, from the major players, either the tech companies or, as I understand it, you were just at a conference where a top Justice Department antitrust official spoke. What are the major players saying?
Yeah, the DOJ's top antitrust official, Megan Delrahim, speaking at a conference in Aspen just a few days ago, was talking about this investigation. And he said that, you know, things are intensifying. The feds are now beginning to request those documents from the major tech companies and talking to some of their critics as well. And so the message from the tech industry in response has been, please leave us alone, right? They say that they're not too big and that they're not too powerful. And they point to the fact that consumers really enjoy using their services. And they've made this case not just to regulators, but to folks on Capitol Hill who have also made a whole lot of noise about this, who have talked about regulating Silicon Valley in other ways, such as with respect to privacy and the content that they allow on their websites, because the industry sees this as a really pivotal moment. The future of the tech industry, the future of companies like Facebook and Google hang in the balance as the feds and the states decide what to do on antitrust.
Although interestingly, Tony, we've heard people like Facebook's co-founder Mark Zuckerberg saying that in some areas they welcome or say they welcome more regulation to keep our elections secure, to protect people's privacy. So are they talking out of both sides of their mouth?
It's one thing to say you support regulation in the abstract and another to point to specific regulations that you'd support or specific bills that you'd be okay with. And so that's the thing that somewhat has been missing from a company like Facebook and from a CEO like Mark Zuckerberg. It's truly understanding exactly what they want. Zuckerberg sort of sketched this out, but we're still having a conversation in Washington right now about what exactly the future of consumer privacy regulation will look like. So it'll be interesting to see if lawmakers ever get a bill, if Facebook actually will support it here. And privacy is just one of many issues that these companies face. You know, even though antitrust is sort of its own bucket, competition concerns live in a very specific universe, there are other ways to get at competition, and regulation is one of them.
Tony Rahm covers tech policy for The Washington Post. Tony, thanks very much for making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
Marquez Brownlee, before we get back to talking about consumer tech, I wonder what your take is on these concerns about regulations. You've seen products change over the years in terms of the way that they handle data and privacy, or, you know, just what bands of the spectrum that they use to send signals. What's your take on whether certain kinds of regulations would be more helpful or be better or worse for consumers?
Yeah, I think the general goal of the regulations to create more competition can never be a bad thing. So I've talked about it in the past that I love that competition makes the end result better. And it makes sense that a lot of these big companies are trying to argue, well, our products are great already, but there's always the question of if they make a wrong turn or if they do something that's not so beneficial for us, then we would have wished those regulations were in place where they could actually make sure we're still in the best interest. So I sort of feel like I'm on the fence where I can see both sides, where the companies think they're doing the right thing, but that we want the best for the consumer.
Let's get to some more of our listeners' questions. Joel tweeted, What do you advise consumers who look for smart home devices while being concerned about cybersecurity protection built into them? My spouse bought an Echo, but I don't want to connect it. Marquez?
Yeah, so the question is, what do you want to do with that Echo? Do you just want it to have, you know, set timers and maybe, you know, have it remember to remind you to do something every once in a while? Then you don't necessarily have to get an Echo. You can get something a lot simpler. You can get something that doesn't have a camera. It doesn't have, you know, all these connected services. But on the other half, if you wanted to do all these things like start your music playlists and wake you up in the morning with a certain podcast and all these things that require connectivity, then you're going to probably want to sort of give it that permission. As long as you're looking at something that's been trustworthy and has a track record of nothing too egregious, you're probably in the green. But again, you can never really predict what the companies are going to do in the future. So it's tough to recommend a specific thing for you, but keep an eye on the track record.
How do you monitor those track records, especially with something like the Echo? I mean, the technology that allows you to make a verbal command, and I will not say the name of that system that begins and ends with an A because it will wake up for everyone who has one within earshot of their radio, and that will be a string of angry tweets I don't want. But that technology exists in other devices. You can buy a Sonos One speaker now, which is Wi-Fi-enabled synchronized speakers that have that Amazon Echo function built into them. So how do you keep track?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways. Same thing with Google Assistant right now, where there's a bunch of different versions of it with different pros and cons and different priorities. So you have to look at what you want in that specific device. So let's say you're looking at, you have a Google account, you have a Google Calendar, Gmail, all that stuff. So you want a Google Assistant enabled version. There's going to be the Sonoses of the world that prioritize sound quality. So if you're listening to a lot of music, you look towards that. There's going to be the Google Home Minis and the versions that have a screen. So if you're doing a lot of cooking and you want a lot of instructions and you want to be able to ask it for a recipe and see what you need, then you look towards the one with screens. There are so many to keep track of. You're right. It's kind of like buying a phone again, where there are the sort of top dogs, but then there's a thousand other ones all trying to vie for your attention in different ways. But sort of deciding right off the bat what you want it to do for you will help you pick which one is the best for you to buy.
James tweeted, how has YouTube changed over the years? I know there have been massive issues with ad revenue. Do you see the day where people leave YouTube and go onto their own sites and cut out the middleman?
YouTube over the years. YouTube has changed a lot. That's absolutely right. I think the biggest thing I've noticed is actually just scale, where, you know, YouTube was much smaller 10 years ago than it is the behemoth that it is today. The ad revenue thing, which has been a problem for some YouTubers, is just one of many, you know, smaller mini crises they've had over the course of the past few years. But the day that we actually look to a different site to sort of start a media company or to start uploading videos where we want them to be seen is the day YouTube has to shift to make themselves better. I always ask to myself, what if I'm looking for a video on the new iPhone, for example, where am I going to go online to search iPhone 11? I'm going to go to YouTube.com and search iPhone 11. The day that the answer to that question changes is the day that I'm willing to consider uploading videos to another site, too.
Now, some YouTubers have their channel as their full-time job. Is that the case for you, or do you do other things?
Yeah, that is my full-time job.
And do you, I also know some YouTubers have like other revenue sources where they'll have like a Patreon or products, or they'll have, you know, a subscriber, like a subscription only site. Have you contemplated those things? Do you do any of that, or do you just kind of focus on the ad supported part of YouTube?
I'm mainly focusing on the videos and ad support, and I do also have a little line of merch, so you can buy apparel and things like that.
There must be a lot of work that goes into some of the videos, setting aside the production. I mean, back in May, you did a video, and we'll play a little clip, a video about Huawei, the big Chinese tech company, and it being cut off from Google. Here's a quick clip from that video.
You may have recently seen some version of the news that Huawei was cut off from Google, but clearly there's a lot more to it. This is a super complex topic with policy and timelines and a whole bunch of moving parts. So I clearly didn't rush this video out. I wanted to actually take my time to summarize this topic, but here we are. This is everything you need to know so far in one place. So Huawei, based in China, huge company, absolutely massive, and they have all kinds of businesses in tech. They sell computers, and they sell, most notably, smartphones.
That's part of Marques Brownlee's video about Huawei. Worth noting that just recently it was learned that Huawei's CEO sent out a memo to the staff saying that the company faces a life or death crisis based in part on some of its fights with the U.S. government. How do you go about, Marques, building this knowledge base? I mean, part of what you're doing almost feels journalistic.
Yeah, a lot of it is I'm going through as many sources and different versions of the news that is possible that I can find and putting them all in one place. So a big part of the videos that I make is the pre-production process, I'll call it, which is just writing and trying to compact things into – I'm basically focusing on information density, compact things into as small a space as possible without leaving out vital information. And a lot of that involves – I guess what you would call a journalistic process of a lot of research and putting sources together and that sort of thing.
You also get to interview people like Elon Musk, like Bill Gates, people that, frankly, we would like to talk to. What is, and you know, no disrespect, I am mad at you, but we would like to talk to them. So, Bill Gates, if you ever would like to be on 1A, our number is 202-885. What is it about talking to you that some of these tech titans prefer over talking to the mainstream press?
Yeah, I think it may just come down to a little bit style and a little bit agenda. So a lot of times news, if you take someone like Elon, for example, people are trying to talk to him about a very specific thing. And you kind of already know when you go into an interview what they're trying to talk to you about. And when you come to a little more of a casual show where I'm not diving in on, can you tell me exactly why the Tesla Model S has had these issues for the past month? I'm just talking about tech generally with people who are in the tech industry. And just at that surface level, you get a very different perspective about how Bill Gates looks at tech, how Elon looks at electric cars, period. Like, that's a sort of a big, fun topic to go through without having a very pinpointed agenda that I think you typically get. So I think it's just more fun. I think they'll look at the previous interviews that have been done and figure that, you know, that's something I'd like to be a part of.
It's also worth noting, Marques, that the tech industry is still dealing with a lack of diversity in its ranks, as has YouTube. And it's worth noting that you are not just a young male who's doing tech videos. You are a young black male doing tech videos. How does the importance of that strike you?
Yeah, it's actually come up in mainly the fact that people love representation and people are sort of drawn to the fact that they can do something when they see someone who looks like them doing it. So I've spoken to many people, you know, in the streets and around the studio who started a YouTube channel because they saw me doing it, and that wasn't something they saw before until they saw my videos. So that's been pretty special to me.
Let's get in a few more questions before our time is up. We got a voicemail from a listener who used to work in tech and thinks that pretty much everything has improved except one thing.
This is Vince from Colorado. I had a question. I was in the IT field for many years until I got burnt out. So I know the technology at this point is pretty advanced for everything we need to do. The one thing that hasn't kept up, in my opinion, is the battery life. I wonder if he could explain anything about, is there any new technology in batteries for these smaller devices?
Good question, Vince. Marques, what would you say to Vince?
I love this question. Before you even played it, I knew he was going to say battery, and I completely agree. But here's the thing
you were that sure.
Yeah, but the thing, I've thought about this before. You're right. Like a smartphone from 5 years ago, what's a great battery life? What, a day? And then a smartphone from today, 2019, what's a great battery life? A day, right? But when you consider battery chemistry, which has been improving year after year, alongside all the power that's been put into our smartphones, if you look at what a smartphone did and how much power a smartphone needed 5 to 10 years ago versus the amount of things smartphones do now. I mean, I was just testing a 5G smartphone that had a 6.5-inch 1440p AMOLED display and was ripping 2 gigabits per second down off of Verizon 5G and was doing all these crazy things that smartphones just didn't do.
Translation, great processor, awesome screen.
Yeah.
Right.
And still has a one-day battery life. That is a direct line of improvement in the quality of the batteries. So it isn't, you know, getting worse. It's getting better to keep up. But it would be awesome to see some crazy new technology. Something we've heard about is possibly graphene batteries being a thing, solid-state batteries that would make not only super fast charging possible, but multi-day, multi-week battery life a real possibility.
Yeah,
but that's many years out. I think we're like still looking at, you know, incremental improvements in the chemistry of normal battery tech.
Yeah, almost like it has to outrun our demands on smartphones and devices to keep up. Speaking of burnout, which Vince mentioned, how do you unplug?
Oh, yeah. Well, I play Ultimate Frisbee. So every weekend, I'm pretty much unplugged for 48 hours. I play in the professional league in the United States called the AUDL, and I play for New York's club team called Pride of New York, and that's just a constant thing.
Do you think that we do a good enough job of unplugging?
No. I think I'd go a little insane if I spent too much time on one side or the other. If I never unplugged and I was constantly doing this, I'd probably lose my mind. But if I never plugged in, if I was always offline, of course, I'd be a totally different person. So, yeah, it's nice to have a healthy balance.
Speaking of other interests, one listener tweeted, "Hey, Marquez, I seen your episode of sneaker shopping, and I enjoyed it. As a fellow sneakerhead, I'm tired of losing to bots during drops when sneakers go on sale. I'm in the market to buy a laptop to use a bot for sneakers. Best model? Best bot? Thanks. Tech on."
Wow, he's going to the dark side. I am tired of losing to bots, too.
And just to be clear, what we're talking about is you go on an auction site and someone creates a program to just bid until they win.
Yeah, yeah. These companies, so for those unfamiliar with sneakerhead culture, companies often will come out with limited edition sneakers, shoes, that people would love to get their hands on. And it's sort of a random lottery style where you can maybe get to buy the shoes if you get selected. A lot of people have sort of hacked that system by just ramping up their number of entries by entering over and over and over again with these bots and massively increasing their chances of winning and therefore making it almost impossible for regular people to win the sneakers. And I hate that. And I lose to bots all the time, too. The fact that he's asking what bot to use is hilarious to me. I have no idea. I haven't even considered that.
So we should just keep him away from the dark side.
Yeah, just keep trying your luck, man, just like us.
By the way, I should note, we did a program last year, last May, about American sneaker culture. You'll find it online at the1a.org. Marquez Brownlee, YouTuber with 9 million subscribers and a new podcast coming out called Waveform. Marquez, we really appreciate your time, man. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks so much for having me.
You can check out our podcast on the NPR One app or any app you like. All the links to listen are online at npr.org/1a. Today's conversation was produced by Haley Blassingame. To learn more about her and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.